Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Just before Sri Ram Navami, which is celebrated this year in just 3 days' time from now, we're more eager to hear and chant about Lord Sri Ramachandra, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It's natural for us to want to glorify the Supreme Lord, and it's very deeply ingrained, or was ingrained, in the Indian culture. Most of the people were illiterate in India and during the British time. Actually, there was a good system of education, but with the British social engineering, they broke it down to a large extent. So many people were illiterate. But in North India, the influence of the Ramcharitmanas, which in North India they refer to that as Ramayana, although actually Ramayana means Valmiki, the version in Sanskrit by Valmiki. Ramcharitmanas is in Avadhi, which nowadays would be considered a dialect of Hindi, in medieval Avadhi language, which is close enough to Hindi that Hindi-speaking people can, to quite some extent, understand it. So the situation was that people's education was in Ram Lila, in North India, in the Hindi, what we nowadays call the Hindi-speaking belt. And people, although uneducated, unable to read and write, many of them, they could recite so many charpoys, they're called, the verses from Ramcharitmanas. They could recite, and full of instruction for various circumstances. How could they recite? Because they, from childhood, they hear again and again and again. So although living in this world, for persons who are raised in such a culture, for them, Ram is real. Not someone to be remembered just around the time of Ramanavami, or around the time of Dashera, or Ram Vijay Mahotsav, but all day, every day. This atmosphere we want to create in our farms, of course, our Krishna-conscious farm communities. Of course, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, our tendency is to focus more on Radha Krishna, Gaurnitai, Gaurgadadhara, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Shivasadi Gaur Bhaktivinoda. That is our tendency. But ideally, we should all be so steeped in knowledge of and thought of the Ramayana, Mahabharata, Bhagavatam, that it's just as natural for us as it is people in the modern age to speak about all kinds of nonsense. The recent American election means that Trump was out and Biden is in, but Trump was, like him or dislike him, Trump was such a personality that he had people talking about him a lot. But what benefit, whether you speak for him or against him, there's no benefit in doing so. But by speaking about Rama, Krishna, Gaura, Nrsimha, Vamana, these avatars of the Lord, how much we're benefited. Just to think of them is purifying. Now this Ramayana, What is the attraction of that? The story is fairly simple compared to Mahabharata, where there's many, many complex storylines. Ram Leela, it's pretty linear, in as much as there are different khandas, Bal Khanda, Ayodhya Khanda. It goes one after the other. Ram is born. Prior to Ram's birth, there's a description of the situation. Ram is born, he grows up, he's taken by Vishvamitra, he marries Sita, he's about to be crowned, and he's sent to the forest. He goes to the forest, and there are different adventures here and there, but the storyline is fairly straightforward. It's not difficult to follow. He goes to the forest, and he's supposed to go to Dandakaranya, and then spends 10 years. First he's in Chitrakoot, and then nothing much. Nothing much happens until toward the end of the time they say, let's go to see Agastya. So they go to South India. They walk to South India, a long way to go, across the Vindhyas. And then Agastya sends them to Panchavati, no doubt thinking of the Janasthan, the Kara, Dushana, Trisiras, the Rakshasas there to be killed. And then the action really starts to pick up a bit, with Ram single-handedly killing 14,000 Rakshasas, including, Kara, Dushan, Trishira, and then Shurpanakas. That's all related. Shurpanakas disfigurement, and then she goes back to Lanka. She complains to Ravana. Ravana gets Maricha to take the form of a deer. And there's lots of instruction. Even when Maricha, when he's instructing Ravana, he speaks a lot of praise of Rama, praise of Sita. It's backhanded praise, you could say, because he doesn't like Rama or Sita. And there's some good instruction from the worldly point of view, we find throughout Ramayana. Even Maricha says to Ravana, you should be content with what you have and know your limits. And then the story unfolds. The deer is the ruse works, and then Sita is kidnapped, and then Ram is distressed looking for Sita, and they team up with the Vanaras, the monkeys, and the story goes on. Eventually they find Sita, they go to Lanka, this big battle, they kill Ravana, and they go back to Ayodhya. And the story, that's pretty much it, although we have the Uttarakhanda, which fills in all different missing bits and pieces here and there. So it's a fairly straightforward story. Even completely imaginary stories made up by Karmis. I remember reading one. Oh, there are so many which are really quite... Well, that's something which is one characteristic of detective novels, for instance. Or action novels, they have all kinds of twists and turns and unexpected things happening. It's all quite complex, and you have to be tuned in to understand what's going on. So from that point of view, the Ram Leela, it may not seem to be such an interesting story as many things that we, novels and this and that. But what is the charm of Ram Leela? Why is it that people like to hear it again and again and again? I'm personally, in this time before Ram Navami, I'm listening to Amoghalila Prabhu. He took sannyas a few years not Amogalila. What is it? Amalabhakta. Amalabhakta. Amogalila is also a great devotee, disciple of Srila Prabhupada. listening to his recitation of Ramayana. Although I know the story. In one sense, I can say I know. But what is the attraction to hear it again and again and again? Because Ram, Sita Ram, they are the natural objects of love for us. It's just a natural function of the soul to want to hear about Ram. It's not a natural function of the soul to hear about imaginary persons in a novel. It's not a natural function of the soul to hear about the latest lucubrations of speculative scientists or the outbursts of politicians. These are the perverse reflections of the tendency to want to hear about great, actually great personalities. Even to hear about demigods, that's also very good. And the demigods, Lord Shiva, people like to hear about Lord Shiva also. But because he's a great devotee of the Supreme Lord, therefore it's also relishable to hear about him. And in the Vedic literature, the Puranas, we have so many narrations of demigods and this and that. But really it's Vishnu, the Supreme Lord, his pastimes. And among all his pastimes, there are various avatars. We don't hear much about... it's related, but we don't hear much. There's not nearly so much the matter available, subject matter available for us to hear about Matsya, Kurama, Varaha, even Narasimha, there's more. Vamana, there's more than Matsya and Kurama. Parashuram, something is there. But really, the two lords, Rama and Krishna, and later Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there's so much material available. Even the Ramayana, generally people nowadays, they go through abridged versions. But it's good also to go through a full version with commentary. But even the Ramayana we have available in the world at the present time, Valmiki's Ramayana, that's also an abridged version, because the original version is lakhs and lakhs of verses long. But who in Kali Yuga is going to have a lifetime long enough to hear that? Because we can just like we have 10 years in Ramayana, practically 10 years just summarized briefly, because it was routine life, blissful life. Ram, Sita, and Lakshman living in the forest, but it was as straightforward day to day. They were rising and doing their bathing, doing their religious duties, and so. But in between, there's so many things, little things. It may be what we think, little things. Just like in Chaitanya Charitamrita, so many things are recorded, but no doubt many, many more things are not recorded. All blissful, but how much can we catch? How much can we remember? How much can we as conditioned souls appreciate? So these Ramayana, Bhagavad Purana, Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, they're like primers. They're just enticing us. Hear about it. Then we develop a desire. Oh, that's what I want. That's what I really need. I let me live in such a way, absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, that I can go to Krishna. Then we live with Krishna. Then we go to live with Krishna. Then exactly hearing about Krishna, and it's not exactly the same. Definitely in Krishna Leela, there's hearing about Krishna also. Therefore, we have Gopi Gita, Venu Gita, the gopis, when they're not directly with Krishna, they're glorifying Krishna, they're remembering Krishna, they're reciting the pastimes of Krishna. So that's there also, but the details, so many little details, we have to be there and live and see and participate. And even we may not see everything, but then that will be discussed among the gopis. Krishna, a little baby, is playing. Oh, did you hear about what Krishna did? Not everyone may see it, but they'll discuss among themselves. The ladies gossip. In the village women, they gossip. Well, in Vrindavan, the gossip is gossip about Krishna. So that's higher than the big philosophical discussions of the Upanishads. The village ladies are talking about Krishna going in someone's house and pinching a baby and making him cry, higher than discussions of the Upanishads. When we go through all the Upanishads, go beyond, and then we'll gossip about baby Krishna, little bit grown up, pinching someone else's baby and making him cry. So what is it? What is the attraction of Ramayana? Now we're concentrating on Ramayana. It's Ram, Sita Ram, the personality of Ram, the personality of Sita, the personality of Lakshman, Bharat, Shatrughna, Dasharath, Kaushalya, Sumitra. It's all very attractive. What about Kaikeyi? Not very attractive. Doesn't seem to be very attractive. But Ram would never allow anyone to, especially Lakshman was really critical of her, but Ram would never allow. Even Bharat was very critical, his own mother. He would never allow anyone to criticize. So natural love for Ram, and why is there natural love? Because of his qualities. He's naturally lovable. Love means there's some reciprocation. There's one party wants to benefit the other according to their situation. Ram, as the king, wants to benefit the citizens by protecting them, by making all arrangements for them to live peacefully and happily. And the citizens, they want to reciprocate with the king by glorifying him, by paying their taxes duly. But it's more than just an economic arrangement. Even in a kingdom, if there's a good king, people love him. And just a few years ago, the king in Thailand, he died. Now, he was a constitutional monarch. But I was living in Thailand for some time. People loved him. Because in their eyes, he embodied all that was best about Thai culture. Or they felt he's overseeing and protecting us, although actually he wasn't, because it's only a constitutional monarchy. But that feeling is there. Just as a little aside here, the kings in Thailand, they all bear the name Rama, pronounced in Thai, which is, you wouldn't recognize it, but it's Rama, Palam, and then the Palam, Sri Rama. And then the old capital of Thailand is Ayutthaya. The city is still there. It's named after Ayodhya. And very prominent in traditional Thai culture is Ram Kang Heng, which is the Thai version of the Ramayana. So, yeah, Ram Leela is widely spread all over what we now call Southeast Asia. It was there in Afghanistan, everywhere. It was Mahabharata, the great culture of India. So people, they love The king in Thailand, maybe not the present one so much. I don't want to get into that. Why? But because they see the quality, what they expect in the ideal king, and then hearing about the ideal king, Rama, and how the citizens, they loved him, and he loved the citizens. It's not just doing one's duty. Rama, he is Maryada Purushottam. He comes to establish dharma, what is proper etiquette, what is proper behavior, how to live in this world properly. He insisted on going to the forest to fulfill the order of his father, Aryavachasa Yadagad Aranyam, as stated in Bhagavatam. On the order of his father, he went to the forest. Why? Because his highest duty is to obey his father. Even though in so many ways it would cause so much distress, but the first thing he has to follow the order of his father. He's very fixed on that lesson he has to give. So his righteousness. His adherence to dharma, taking the role of a human, showing the behavior of an ideal human in the kshatriya role, that all benefit comes by adhering to dharma. And everyone in their position, according to their position, we should adhere to dharma. Even in the Uttarakhanda of Ramayana, there's one of those narrations which get people wondering what's going on. There are a few of them. Why did Rama banish Sita? Why did he allow her to? Why did he not accept her when after killing Ravana and made her go into the fire? And then later, when she was pregnant, why did he reject her? And then, although there's no question of Ram actually rejecting Sita. And then another one is the Shudra who was performing austerities, and Ram killed him because he's a Shudra. He's not supposed to perform austerities. That's for Brahmanas and maybe Kshatriyas who have retired from city life, from ruling, but not for Shudras. And Ram killed him because it was upsetting the whole dharma. Nowadays, people are very concerned about upsetting the balance of the ecosystem, but there's the dharma system. If there's just like the ecosystem, the air is polluted by so much toxic fumes being discharged into it, and as a result, everything becomes imbalanced. The chemical biochemical imbalance, which results in hormonal and genetic changes, and species become extinct or threatened, and so many considerations. So, in the same way, if dharma is not followed properly, if someone doesn't follow it properly, it can upset the whole balance, and it upsets one person's misdeed can upset for the whole society, for everyone. So the king has to uphold dharma. That is his duty, even by punishing, if necessary, even by severely punishing, if necessary, those who transgress dharma. This is the stern duty of the kshatriyas. And stern duty of the kshatriya has to set such an example that even he banishes Sita, just to set the example. So why did he kill the Shudra? Because the Shudra, he wasn't qualified for performing those austerities. Physically, he was able to do so, but he didn't have the proper mentality in doing so. And so Rama, he did that. So many of these things are very difficult to understand for people raised in a contemporary supposedly egalitarian society. Which there are many misconceptions. Basically, people do not know what the purpose of life is or how to attain it. We should understand this. From Ramayana, ideal life, we can learn. And what's the basis of that? We can learn from Bhagavad Gita. We should follow Ram's example. We worship Krishna, who is superficially, or actually you could say, a thief, a liar, a cheat, a rake. We worship Krishna. But we should follow the example of Rama in our lives. So that's why for Gauriyas also, is even to learn how to live in this world, it's important for us to understand Ram Leela, to see how committed we should be to following the rules and regulations of the Varnashram system, with the faith that by doing so, that is pleasing to the Supreme Lord, that will maintain order in human society in a manner that everyone can ultimately be raised to the spiritual platform. Of course, in Gauriya Vaishnavism, we hear a lot about transcending Varnashram Dharma, but first we should know what it is and follow it. Simply to transgress it, transgression and transcending are not necessarily the same thing. Sinful, generally to transgress Varnashram Dharma is sinful, and it leads to degradation. When one is on a very highly elevated platform, one can transcend it. That is another kind of transgression. But that fulfills the purpose of Varnashram, which is to bring one, Nistraigunyo Bhavarjuna, to bring one beyond the three modes of material nature in which the Varnashram is concerned with. But if one is within the modes of nature and transgresses Varnashram Dharma, then he just sinks down to the lowest tamagun. Varnashram Dharma can be followed at least if one is in Rajoguna and then comes up to Sattvaguna. And even if one is in the transcendental position, one should generally follow Varnashram Dharma. This we learn. We have to hear Ramayana and understand it, and it needs to be explained to us very much so at the present time. We hear Ram Leela, but for us it may just seem like some kind of fairy story. They call it Hindu mythology. Because it seems so different to our way of life and our way of understanding and thinking at the present time. So it requires to be explained also. And it requires to be explained why we should follow this example and how we can do in our present lives. The modern, ridiculously over-complex society, based for all its sophistication and high talk and high education, is based basically on controlled hedonism. Let everyone enjoy as much as they can. Making a society in which everyone's supposed to enjoy themselves. But it's such a long way away from this society based on duty. We see Rama. He's loved by the citizens because he lives for them. His foremost duty is to protect the cows, the brahmanas, the women, children, old men, that is his old people. That is his duty. But he does it out of love also. And we find throughout Ramayana, we find that it's a very nice culture. It's based on love. We find in the ashrams of the rishis, the birds and the animals, they move around without any fear. Just because the rishis, they love all the animals and birds and everything. And the animals and birds can understand that and reciprocate with that. So it's a very nice culture. And so by hearing Ramayana repeatedly, and then naturally our love for Ram will start to arise, unless we're a demon, like Ravana. He heard about Rama, and he didn't think, oh, that's very nice. He thought, oh, that's very bad. He thought just the opposite. Or if you're a Jain, the Jains, they became so envious, they made their own Ramayana, in which Ravana's the good guy and Ram's the bad guy. No, actually, Ram, they say, Ravana's the main good guy, but then Lakshman kills Ravana, and Lakshman goes to hell, and Ram becomes self-realized, according to their understanding. Complete distortion. And they say, well, we don't believe, see these Hindus, they're all sentimentalists, and they invented so many stories in Ram Leela. We don't believe in all that. It's a perverse attraction. They're attracted to Ram, but at the same time, they want to denigrate him. They can't have, that's the point. They're living in India, where there's everywhere Rama. Everywhere people, and naturally people think of Rama, but they can't avoid Ram, so they just make their own version and twist it all. Nasty. But naturally, if we hear Valmiki Ramayana, that is original. Actually, there's Mula Ramayana, which is lakhs and lakhs of shlokas, but we have in the original for us in this world at the present time today, Ramayana, Valmiki, we have that. And then we have regional editions also. Here I'm in Tamil Nadu, so we have Kamban Ramayana, Ramcharitmanas, Krithivas Ramayana, in different languages, Oriya, Telugu. It's been retold with embellishments and refurbishments by the writers. But they're all devotees, whether Tulsidas or Krithivas or Kamban, they're devotees, and they may have their divine vision also, and naturally by hearing the people, they develop love, whether you're hearing in Tamil or Telugu, naturally love for Lord Rama will arise. And that's what life is all about. Love, bhakti. Bhakti means love for the Supreme Lord and his love for us. That love, Rama loves Hanuman. He loves Lakshman. He embraces Hanuman. Why does he embrace Hanuman? Because Hanuman has brought news of Sita. He embraces. Why? Because he loves Sita. So this is the most ideal love, Sita and Rama. Most ideal. Sita, Ram, Radha, Krishna, Rukmini, Krishna, Lakshmi, Narayana. Most ideal love, the paragon, the exemplar of love. That we, if we're going to talk about love, then what is the highest love? Sita, Ram. Rama loves Sita. Sita loves Ram. She goes to the forest with him. She cannot stay behind. How can she live without him? But then how can others also live without him? We hear in Gauriya teachings, well, that's the special contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to emphasize the feelings of separation of the inhabitants of Vrindavan when Krishna leaves Vrindavan, or even when he's in Vrindavan and they can't be with him, or even sometimes when they're with him but they're so much in anxiety they think they're not with him. This is really very high level, the love for Krishna in separation. And actually, chronologically, we find even in the Alvars of South India, that feeling is there also, that that's expressed in the what is that, Nalaya Devya Prabandham. So they're expressing that I couldn't get him, I couldn't see him, I'm crying, I want to reach him. That feeling was expressed by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, it's not exactly a chronological development because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is eternal, although chronologically he comes after the Alvars of South India. But that those feelings expressed in great intensity, and even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu invites everyone to come and join in this, in these pastimes. So we hear, especially in the Gaudiya teachings about love in separation, but definitely it was there in Ayodhya. We hear so much about Ram and Sita and Lakshman in the forest. But what was Bharat thinking when he was back, just outside Ayodhya in Nandagram? And then what about all the inhabitants of Ayodhya when Bharat came back to Ayodhya after he was called urgently back after Ram had gone to the forest and Dasharatha had passed away? And he immediately saw there's something wrong with the city. Why are people not moving around happily? Why does everything look, everyone, you don't hardly see anyone. Everything looks sad. Ayodhya means all happiness. Especially after Ram was born, he understood there's something wrong. What's wrong? Ram has gone to the forest. And they lived in separation for so many years in the forest. Not in the forest. They're in the city, but for them, it was Ayodhya had become a place of suffering. They only lived in hope Ram is coming back, but that wasn't sure also. They presumed after 14 years, he's supposed to come back, but who knows what can happen in the forest at any time. Of course, it's not expected that Ram can be overcome by any calamity, but it wasn't known to the inhabitants of Ayodhya how powerful Ram was. He had killed Subahu, Tartaka, and shot Maricha. Woo! All the way from North India, way out into the sea. As a boy, he'd done that, but his great exploits as a fighter, this became apparent first of all when he killed the 14,000 Rakshasas in Janastan. That was his first really big military feat. But the people in Ayodhya, they didn't know anything about that. They didn't know he's coming back or not coming back. And what is, because they think of him as a man, human. So in the forest, anytime you can get bitten by a snake, there are tigers and lions and bears and or elephants and all kinds of wild boars. There are all kinds of dangerous animals. So they wasn't sure he was going to come back at all. So they were hoping, living in separation. Sita went to the forest with Rama, but what happened to the girls who were with her? They were so happy. We don't even hear about them, but so many girls, they came when a princess comes from one, she goes from one city to another when she's married. She goes from her father's city to her husband's city. And then the girls who have been raised with her up to that age, her maidservants, who also are just like friends, they go with her to continue serving her And then when she came to Ayodhya, from the Ayodhya side, she'd also get more maidservants, so many maidservants. And they, in the inner apartments, they spend a lot of time in the inner apartments. They're not out in the city like the men. So they spent a lot of time there. They'd be together. And how much... That was a very happy life for them. They're with Sita. They're bathing her, helping her dress, arranging her hair, painting her feet with altar, and at the same time talking, dressing her very nicely for Rama. They're all in love with Rama in a different way. They're all in love with Rama. They're all in love with Sita. And the perfection of their life, they're living with this goddess, Sita Devi, and just making everything nice for her so she can be pleasing to Rama, assisting her in that. Very, very happy with it. All of a sudden, she's gone. And what do they do? What is left for them to do? Their whole life is service to Sita. And they have nothing to do. Just lamentation. That's all. We don't even hear about this. But it's... What is that love that they have? Why? What is so special? Actually, the Ramayana, it's the story of Lord Rama, right? It's Rama. Ramayana. But actually, even in the Ramayana itself, we find it's a story. Actually, the central figure is Sita. It's about Sita. And we find in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, they emphasize Lakshmi more than Sita more than Rama. Why is Rama great? Because of Sita. Why is Narayan great? Because of Lakshmi. The people tend to get it around the you can say the inner core, the esoteric Vaishnavas. They say, yeah, Narayan is supreme. Yes, who's supreme? Shiva. No, Narayan is supreme. But then, actually, when you get into it more, you get into it deeper, we find out who is supreme. Yeah, Sita. She must be. Rama becomes like a madman in separation from her. And she's also feeling distress. He's the supreme lord. But he's so much in love with her. So again, it comes to the question, who's supreme, Sita or Rama? Lakshmi or Narayana? Yeah, Narayan supreme. Right. Narayan supreme. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti pashanti panti kalayanti chirang jaganti. He can do the functions of his body he can do. With any part of his body, he can do anything. So he produces Brahma from his navel. He doesn't need a... Generally, if a man wants to create a son, generally, always, if a man wants to create a son, he has to have a female. But Narayana does it. So he's superior to Lakshmi. Yeah, okay. All right, that's one perspective. But the more internal perspective is that Sita, who is this goddess? And even the devotees, they describe the beauty of Sita, the beauty of Radha, and even they'll describe her breasts are so nice, her hips are so nice. But there's no... Actually, these things are not to be discussed by materialistic people. But devotees, they don't take it in a lusty way. That's for Ravana. They want to lust after Sita and then be destroyed. But the devotees see she's the mother and they describe her beauty. She's a goddess. We describe the beauty and try to paint the picture of Sita. How beautiful. And we can try to paint, we can try to describe, but there's no description actually. But that's appreciating her beauty as mother and how she is appreciated by Rama, and even Rama's appreciation for her beauty, it's not the appreciation of a man in this world for the beauty of a beautiful woman of this world. That's called lust. But the experience, the rasa of prem, there's appreciation of the beauty. But in our contaminated consciousness, we cannot understand what Rama feels upon seeing the beauty of Sita. It's not a lusty, it's not mundane lusty, it's prem. It's definitely there's appreciation, and the maidservants of Sita are making her, they're washing her and combing her hair, putting braids in her hair, all these things, to make her beautiful. She's already beautiful, but just to make her appearance just so nice that Rama will be so appreciative. So Rama, yeah, he appreciates her beauty. He's attracted by her beauty, but not in a lusty way. But Ravana, he only sees the reflection, Maya Sita. And even that Sita, she's in captivity under Ravana. And she's not bathing in a very sullen, completely despondent attitude, not eating, so very thin, but still she's so beautiful that Ravana is captivated by her beauty and wants to enjoy it, even in such a condition. So this is a feature, the goddess, so beautiful. The goddesses, they're so beautiful, even the mundane goddesses. We can't imagine, we say that, yeah, Radha is so beautiful, so much more beautiful than any Durga, Sarasvati, but even Parvati, generally we don't, Parvati, so beautiful. Sarasvati, so beautiful. They're beautiful above. And again, they're mothers. We appreciate their beauty, but it's not in the mood of wanting to enjoy, but just appreciation, so beautiful. Then we have Lalita Sahasranam, then thousand names of the goddess, Devi, Durga, Parvati. Yeah. So this is on a just a higher level. This can be appreciated with the love that we get from hearing. Naturally, we imbibe the loving feelings if we hear from devotees. If we hear from Mayavadis, then we'll get a kind of love mixed with envy. It's not really love at all. It's an appearance of love. But if we hear from devotees about the pastimes of Radha Krishna, Rukmini Krishna, Sita Ram, then naturally that love will arise. And then when we hear the descriptions of Sita's beauty, we won't become like Ravana and want to enjoy. We'll just appreciate, so beautiful she is. As is for Ram to enjoy. Just like when Sita was delivered, then the Ravana was killed, the battle was over, and then the monkeys, they were there, Rama was there, Lakshman was there, Vibhishana was there, and Sita came. And they all wanted to see Sita. Why did they want to see Sita? Generally, a cultured person doesn't look at someone else's wife. But they wanted to see, who is this? Who is this for whom Rama, who is the abode of all good qualities, of the power that can destroy all the universes and can create all the universes, who is this person for whom Rama is completely absorbed? Who is this person? What does she look like? What are her qualities? It's just that Rama, all of those, with the exception of Lakshman, whoever was with Rama fighting in Lanka, they were all new to Rama. They'd all met him recently, but immediately they were so attracted by his qualities that they were ready to give their life for him. They're completely absorbed in love of him. They can understand what a personality. But then, who is this? Who is this woman who can be the wife of this Rama? And he's so wrapped in love for her, he won't accept any other wife. So they wanted to see, but not out of lusty feeling. There's no question there. But simply, they want to see how beautiful she is. So we can actually appreciate the beauty of Sita, Radha, Rukmini, Lakshmi, Parvati, Sarasvati, when we don't want to enjoy, when we don't have a motive to, this very highly perverse attitude to want to enjoy them. What is that? That's incest, isn't it? We want to enjoy any woman of this world. Actually, all the women are meant for Krishna. They're all our mothers. Of course, it said. It said that one should see Matrivat Paradareshu. One should see all women as mothers. The wives of others we should see as mothers. That we should see. One's own wife one should see as a wife, not as a mother. But if we understand intrinsically, every living being is meant to be enjoyed by Krishna. We have no propriety over anyone. So the desire to enjoy in this world, it is perverse. And when we fully overcome that desire, then we become actually eligible to appreciate the beauty of Sita and the beauty of Rama and the beauty of their love for each other. Eligible means we can begin to enter the understanding. Or even in our conditioned state, if we start to hear with faith, Shradhanvita, even in our conditioned state, if we hear with faith, then the purification takes place. And we hear from devotees and we don't think of Sita as some object of our enjoyment. If we hear from devotees from the beginning, we understand she is the object of Rama's enjoyment and Rama's love. And of course, it's not just her beauty. It's Rama, his qualities, Sita's qualities, all their qualities. Beauty is immediately apparent to the eye, but that's described. That's at the very beginning of Ramayana. Who is that person in the world at the present time who has all good qualities? And his description of Rama and everything, his voice, his attitude, his humility, his gravity, he's ideal. And then who can be his wife? Is Sita Devi. There's a narration. I got it here. Narration, yeah, of Sita Devi, the compassion. The female compassion, the female quality of compassion. That the battle is over, Ravana is killed, Hanuman is sent to bring the news to Sita and bring her into the presence of Rama. Hanuman's already seen her. He knows where she is, who she is. So he goes. And then Sita is always guarded in the Ashok Grove by Rakshasis who've been tormenting her on the order of Ravana, threatening her, if you don't submit to Ravana, we'll eat you for breakfast. And they're quite capable of doing that. Tormenting her, to try to goad her into submitting to Ravana. Hideous in appearance. Only the very sinful people will be born in such a situation with such a mentality. So Hanuman said, okay, it's all over. The battle's over. The Rakshasas are defeated. So you just give the word and I'll kill all these Rakshasis who have been tormenting you. Killing women isn't generally wanted, but these women, it'll be a great pleasure, Hanuman said. All the suffering that they've caused to you. You just give the word, I'll just finish them off now. Rakshasis. Now it's their turn to be afraid. But Sita, she said, no, they're just simple, foolish servants who had to carry out the orders of the king. They're also following their dharma. They are following the orders of the king, what they did to me. And whatever I suffered was due to my past misdeeds. Sita never did any past misdeeds. But that's the quality of a great person. They think like that. And these Rakshasis, they just acted as instruments in the hands of destiny. She was saying, I had to suffer this. So they were just instrumental in this. And then she spoke, Hanuman, maybe you've heard, these are the kind of things that people hear in Vedic culture. Maybe you heard these words that were spoken by a bear. Naparapapam adate paresham papakarmanam samayo rakshitavyastu santas charitrabhushanaha. A great person never takes into account the offenses that are committed against him. Indeed, he vows that at all costs he will not return evil with evil. So Sita Devi says these words were spoken by a bear, and it's not elaborated on in Valmiki Ramayana, because it's Sita presumes that Hanuman knows what she's talking about, and the hearers in general, they're expected to know what it's all about. If we don't know what it's about, it is narrated elsewhere in the Vedic, in the broad corpus of what we call Vedic literature. So once upon a time, there was a hunter in the forest. He went hunting in the forest, but he got hunted himself by a tiger. So he was being chased by a tiger, and he saw a tree he could climb up, so he quickly climbed up the tree, big tree. And then he climbed up and he saw there was a bear lying on one of the, it was a big tree, so a bear was lying on the branches. And the tiger said to the bear, you see, this hunter is our common enemy. Now I'm hunting the tiger. I got behind him, but if he had got me in such a, he could have got me in such a situation that from behind a tree he would have shot me if I hadn't seen him. So he's our common enemy. He can hunt and kill you also. Therefore, you just push him out of the tree and I'll eat him and then we'll both be benefited. And the bear said, well, The hunter has taken shelter of my home, and therefore I won't do any harm to him. To act in such a way would be most wrong, against dharma. And then the bear just went to sleep on the branch. Just, okay, he's come to my home, so I'll protect him. Then the tiger said to the hunter, hey, look, the bear's asleep. You can just push the bear out of the tree so he can fall down, and I'll kill and eat the bear, and then I won't be hungry to eat you. So I won't harm you, I promise. In this way, you'll be benefited and I'll be benefited. The tiger first said to the bear, push out the hunter so I can get my meal. You'll be benefited and I'll be benefited. So again, he's saying to the hunter, now you push out the bear, you'll be benefited and I'll be benefited. So the hunter thought, yeah, that makes sense because, you know, I'll be safe, right, from the tiger. So, okay, I'll push. So he pushed the bear while the bear was sleeping. But as the bear was falling out of the tree, he caught hold of a branch and saved himself. Then the tiger said to the bear, look, now you were so good to the hunter, but the hunter tried to kill you, so now you should retaliate by pushing him out of the tree. You don't know what he's going to do next. You push him out of the tree now. And though the tiger appealed again and again to the bear to do so, the bear said, a great person never takes into account the sins of those who have offended him. Instead, at all costs, he keeps his vow to never return evil for evil, because he knows that good conduct is the ornament of saintly people. Santa Charitra Bhushanam. This story was told, well, it was alluded to by Sita Devi. And that, you see her personality, she's so good. She's so good. And therefore we are it's a natural attraction. We may not, when we first hear Ramayana, we may think it was a nice story, which it is, interesting story, which it is. But as we hear again and again, we start to see more and more what is the love of Rama and Sita for each other, for all living beings. How Rama is the paragon of virtuousness. And just naturally, it's a natural relationship that we develop love for these divine personalities. And in this, because Ram comes to teach how to live in this world, then we should start to behave like that ourselves. It can be very hard in this Kali Yuga, especially. People are very hostile to each other. But forgiveness is good. But then Ram also taught by his behavior that certain people, they should be punished. They shouldn't be forgiven. Those who are not going to change their character. If Ravana had come like Vibhishana and surrendered to Rama, then it wouldn't have been such an interesting story. But Rama would have accepted him. But Ravana, his character was so bad. He wouldn't. He was told again and again and again, don't pick a quarrel with Rama. Don't do it. Maharaja first told him, and then even definitely Vibhishana told him. Mandodari told him, his foremost wife. Even Kumbhakarna told him. He wouldn't listen. He was so overcome by lust. Lust, a very intelligent person, but his intelligence was overcome by lust. So there's so many lessons to learn from Ramayana. It's not just some story. Not just some story. It is a story, but so many things to be learned. And ultimately, learned, yes, how to live in this world, we can learn, but also the imbibing by hearing about the great qualities of Sita and Ram and Hanuman and Lakshman and Bharat and Shatrughna and Dasharath, hearing about their qualities and so many others also, then we develop a desire to be like that and we learn how to be like that. It's so such a great boon. This should be the education. We in history class, what did I learn about? Some of the names I remember. Pitt the Elder, Pitt the Younger, Disraeli, the Corn Laws, Queen Victoria. In history class, we had to study some segment of British history. And it could have been hearing about Rama and actually improving our character and something for our eternal benefit instead of diverting our attention to these ephemeral things. So let us hear. Let us always hear. Go on hearing the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. The names, the forms, the qualities, the pastimes, and become purified and go there. What do we want to remain? Why do we want to stay in this material world? Become a rakshasa, that's all. The material world means we're living like rakshasas. We should be devotees and go to Krishna in the spiritual world, live with him eternally. We have to choose. Do we want to be like Lakshman, Hanuman, serving Rama? We want to be like Ravana, wanting to enjoy beautiful women of this world, or the beautiful women dress themselves up to try to imitate Sita or whatever. Of course, it's auspicious for in Vedic culture for women to dress themselves nicely on auspicious occasions. But if they do so within the ambit of Vedic culture, that's all very good. But if they do so for the purpose of grossly attracting men, that's very bad. And that's all that, because there's no Vedic culture nowadays. All that's left is this Rakshasa culture. How can we expect any goodness in the world? For all the Black Lives Matter and equal rights and save the whale, people for ethical treatment of animals. People have some idea we should try to make things good, but they don't know the basis for trying to make things good. So all their endeavors end in disaster. So real education we should give. Bhagavad Gita, Bhagavatam, Ramayana, this is real education. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, who's introduced us to all of this and who himself is the exemplar of divine spiritual love. All glories to his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindubhyascha patita nam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Dante Nidhaya Churnakang Padaya Nipatya Kritva Chakakushata Vetana Humbravimi He Sadhava Sakala Eva Vihaya Durad Goranga Chandra Charne Kuruta Duraga Parivadatu Jano Yata Tata Va Nano Mukharo Navayam Vicharyamaha Hari rasa madira madati mata bhuvi vilutama nartama nirvishama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.